Colonel Mann, Reel 4. Could you say something about your estimate of the performance of your unit in Korea?
Well, I got nothing but praise for the young British man. Properly led and away from troubles and tribulations of other people's makings, he makes a splendid soldier. There's no such thing as a dud. Some are better than others. But in Korea, my soldiers were absolutely splendid. They were resourceful. They did what they were told. They did require, naturally, a little more supervision than regulars would because they hadn't got the experience. But they soon picked up what was necessary, and they wanted to know what was happening, and I used to make it my business to make to tell them all I knew myself, which wasn't a lot. And result was that I'm proud indeed to have had such a fine battalion of youngsters. Perhaps I should say that now, of course, it's 36 years on, and they were then about 20, so it means they're now about 56 years of age. About 2 or 3 years back, they got together, some of them, and they thought they'd like to have a Middlesex Regiment Korean Club, irrespective of the fact that some of them came to us for the war from the KSLI, the Staffords and other regiments, as I have said. So they set up this Middlesex Regiment Korean Club. They formed a committee, and they asked me to be the president, and I was very honored to be asked. We meet every year. We have a reunion in London, and we've got over 400 names, people who keep in touch, and we have anything up to 100 or 200 who come along to our London reunion, and there we meet each other and tell the usual sort of lies and untruths and half-truths in a very happy atmosphere. Anybody who says that the National Service chap was a shocking fellow and nobody wanted him, etc., etc., I think the proof of the pudding's in the eating with that little story of mine. There may be some misfits here and there, but there certainly weren't in my regiment.
Were there any disadvantages to national servicemen, would you say?
Well, the national service, speaking as a regular officer, the national service is a pain in the neck. Because half your turning out people training young men who are only going to be in the army for about 5 minutes. So from the army point of view, the efficiency of the army, it's the worst possible thing for the army. But from the political, national point of view, it's a marvelous background training for the youth of the nation.
What about the problems of handling troops in Korea? Did, as the commanding officer, did you have any special problems in handling the troops as far as their behavior was concerned that you wouldn't have had in Britain?
Well, I had two, I won't mention any names. There were two only people who failed me. One was a matter of discipline, and the other was a matter of the wrong temperament, shall we say. They did fail in the sense that I had to deal with them, but apart from that, they were the only two, and I don't think that's bad. I think, as I've said, the National Service soldier, well, everybody, but chiefly the National Service chap, does want to know what's happening. Nobody knew too much what was happening, as you also heard me say earlier, talking about General Willoughby on General MacArthur's staff. Nobody knew what was happening. We just had to find out. We didn't know who was on our right and left unless we actually saw them. And to be told that you had Americans or anybody else in the neighborhood, you had to send I had to send my intelligence officer to find out before I knew they were there. So the National Service chap didn't want to know what was happening. And if you built up the link, which obviously one aims to build up, and we certainly built up between those who lead and those who are led, then you do get the best out of everybody.
In what ways did these two misbehave?
Well, one didn't lead his men with the enthusiasm which I expected, and the other one was just indisciplined. He couldn't be trusted to act responsibly on his own.
What ranks did they have?
Well, I think I prefer not to use the ranks. I'll just leave it there, if I may.
Was there any problem with VD or mixing with the women in?
No. Oh, no, women, there weren't any. there were plenty of women in the towns. The moment our gallant allies took over a town like Seoul, they went around and picked out the best-looking girls. They tarted them up, gave them the means to tart themselves up, and you found them sitting in the offices as secretaries. So that was all right, but we frontline soldiers, all we saw was streams and streams of very unhappy refugees passing by. There was an occasion when there had been a couple of girls had complained of rape or something, but there was no question of my people being involved. We weren't in the area. But I suppose with a large army, a mixed army, you were bound to have the odd misfortune such as that, but I had no occasion in my battalion to deal with that at all. The main trouble was you got trench feet. The cold was so frightful that trying to keep the feet warm and the whole body warm, that was a problem. But again, we were better off than many other units. We did have the odd problem, but we seemed to get by.
What were the symptoms of trench feet?
Oh, the foot goes, it's all white and you can't feel it. And of course, in extreme case, of course, I'm told it drops off or something frightful, but we never got to that state. We had a splendid doctor, a quite splendid doctor, two of them. The first one is a great friend of mine. I see him frequently now. And he and our padre that were together, and it was remarkable what they achieved under different conditions.
Was that the only medical condition that you had to deal with in Korea?
I can't think of any other special. I mean, I guess if you asked the doctor, he'd string off a lot. I was conscious of it much more in Hong Kong. More than half my battalion on one occasion were walking about in shorts and shoes and covered in purple paint because they got skin diseases and troubles, which you get in Hong Kong. And I had a young National Service doctor who didn't come to Korea with us. And I sent for him and said, now look here, you're not only a doctor, but you're also an officer. And I said, these men are coming along and you've got half of them not doing any soldiering because they're under your orders. Some are lying, some have got bed down, etc. You've got to be much stricter with you. They all think you're easy. We'll have sick parade in future at 5 in the morning and you've got to really sort these young men out. And he replied to me, what will they say in the House of Parliament? I said, and I won't say now the word I used about the House of Parliament, but I made it quite clear that he and I got a battalion to run, I with his help, and things must improve, and they did.
Was there a problem with boredom or discontent because of lack of contact with home?
Are you talking about Korea?
Yes.
No, there was no question of that because... my wife, as I said earlier, was back in England with a lot of the wives of the regulars. National Service, of course, weren't married. And so that anything that might be worrying the husband or the wife, my wife and I were able to get involved in and help out. And I think we achieved quite a lot between us. The youngsters, of course, they got a job to do. And as I said, the morale was good. And some of the mothers got in touch with members of parliament and said their soldiers were cold and hadn't got this and that. Well, I wasn't too unhappy about that because we were cold and we hadn't got this and that. And I don't know whether the mothers helped, but we certainly did get a lot of clothing sent out to us and eventually in the boots and it did improve. But whether that was the mothers or not, I don't know. But the soldiers, no, they may have they complained to them or told their mothers. As I told my wife, but it wasn't any serious complaint.
I think you were saying earlier that you got certain comforts for the troops.
Yes. Now, I'm glad you asked me about that, because there was a very strong feeling that we were a bit out on a limb. We'd come out in a hurry from Hong Kong. We hadn't left England to go to war like the other troops who joined us later on had. And so we were in some ways a bit forgotten. And I got in touch with people back in England, and people back in England got in touch with me. And as a result, there was a very charming lady, Mrs. Morden, who is now living in the Channel Islands, and she was in the WVS in London, and she and the Lord Lieutenant at the time, the Lord Lieutenant organized, gave his name, to a comfort for the Middlesex soldiers. Lord Lieutenant of Middlesex, the comfort for the Middlesex soldiers. This lady organized it, and we had scarves and all sorts of things sent out to us. And later on, I think they even got a piano out later on, but not in my time. It wouldn't have been much use in the early days of Korea. But it was quite remarkable, the letters and what have you. Christmas time, it was marvelous, and I wrote a letter. I thanked the people concerned personally, and I also put a letter in the papers in England to express our appreciation of what was being done for us. It wasn't so much the scarf, which was jolly nice, and the mittens, which was very nice, but it was my soldiers so much appreciated. We all did the fact that we were remembered.
In this connection, did the troops feel that they were in any sense a forgotten army?
Well, when the 29th Brigade arrived with everything, I think they arrived in November. They came straight from England with their public relation officer and everything else, and they were self-contained, and they were a little bit envious. We thought of us; we were quite different. We got up to the Yalu River almost, and we'd been seeing action all the time, and they were absolutely tailor-made to be Army Reserve, and that's where they found themselves. Tanks and all, and they were very unhappy not to have had their share of the fighting. They got it eventually, of course, in the early part of 1951, but initially they were set back in reserve, and there they were. They got everything that they needed. They got British NAFI, rations, public relations, press, and so on. And in fact, their public relations officer was brought along to us and told he got to include us too. And it took quite a time before they really did take over. It's a funny world, but you don't. If you come out as a team, you tend not to attract others in the team, or they are fighting the same war and you come from the same country. So I think we all felt a bit left out. But then we had the glory, and as I said in a letter to a general who unfortunately handed it to the press and apologized to me afterwards, we're disgustingly proud of being British. And we were. And I think that carried us along and made up for very largely for the fact that we were out on a limb and a little bit forgotten. Except, as I have explained, when the Lord Lieutenant got busy and then things improved. The Argylls, being Scots, all Scottish regiments have a much better press in peace and war than English regiments. And I did say earlier that it began rather indifferently with the press, people in England thinking the Argylls were in Korea without anybody else. But that, fortunately, got put right.
Did you have much contact with war correspondents in Korea?
I have never liked the press, and I don't think they like me very much either. My second command had a very ready pen, and my one of my company commanders had a very good caustic wit. And the two of them were good talking to these other people who used the pen. And I told my second in command that he was look after the press and keep them away from me. And that is what he did. And by and large, they weren't too bad. But we did have some people behave rather badly. I don't think I need go into it now. But some people, having said they wouldn't write something up if we opened our hearts, then proceed to do so, headlines in the paper, and that sort of thing. But I never liked the press very much, I'm afraid, and I'm quite happy to hand over to my second in command and let him get on with it.
Did you feel, from what you saw of the press, that they reported the war accurately?
No, not entirely. The Times, very early on, the Times correspondent was killed. And they sent out another man, and he wrote a book. And I've got an extract from it amongst my papers. In that book, he turned up and he said he was bored with the British. They hadn't got this, that, and the comforts and what have you that the Americans had. So he went off and lived with the Americans. And he wrote his reports about the British in the light of what the Americans told him. The result was that the paper, the Times, quoted untruths and half-truths about us in the early days. And now, as I may have said earlier, I've never bought the Times since.
One thing I haven't asked you about is the question of enemy air power. Did Did it exist whilst you were there?
No. They didn't have any. I never saw. I believe they had the odd plane which dropped a bomb or two, but I was never conscious of the enemy having any aircraft at all.
Can you tell me some more about Brigadier Code?
Well, Brigadier Code was a very fine soldier indeed. He wasn't everybody's cup of tea. He certainly was mine. I got to like him very much as a man, and I think he liked me too. I was virtually his second in command, and when he got ill in Korea, I was the one to take over and be acting brigade commander in his absence. On more than one occasion, he summoned me to his headquarters when there was a quiet moment to have a talk with him. It's a very lonely job being a commander in a battalion. It's a much more lonely one in a brigade, and particularly in a setup such as we found ourselves in Korea. He was responsible that his little British contingent wasn't left out, and that no such fiasco as the Gloucesters should occur. There were five occasions when a lesser man than Brigadier Code, one or more of the battalions under his command would have been left out to no avail. The sad thing was that the Americans considered that the more casualties you had, the better commander you were, or something on those lines. And we, of course, in the British Army, aimed to achieve our objects with the minimum of casualties. Brigadier Code achieved the brigade's objects certainly with the minimum of casualties, and he had a reputation with the Americans who used to come and consult him. There was no doubt about it, we were singularly fortunate in our brigadier, and he certainly did us and the country very, very well indeed in his capacity as brigadier of the 27th Brigade.